Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
All right, moving quickly here, the fourth quarter. The program begins right now. Time for what you need to know. It's brought to you by our friends at Corona. Corona Light, Corona Premier, and the Corona Hard Seltzers. Cinco de Mayo is right around the corner. Get stocked up. We'll be partying all weekend long with it being on Sunday the 5th. Get you some Corona Premier if you're looking to get ready for the beach. Less carbs, less calories. Corona Premier. Buy it wherever you find your Coronas. Royals win today. They use a 7-run ninth inning to polish off the Tigers 8-0. That is a 4-game win streak. Seth Lugo today, 7 innings, allows only 3 hits. Strikes out 9. Something he hadn't been doing a lot of.
Yeah, that was nice.
It gets the K's going. Mikel Garcia batted in 2, his 4th multi-hit game in his last 8. Bobby Witt drove in 3 for the Kansas City Royals. Xavier Worthy, the Chiefs tabbed at pick number 28 after moving up in a trade with the Buffalo Bills. They get the fastest man ever timed at the combine. Xavier Worthy was asked last night what he'll bring to this Chiefs offense.
I feel like down the field is obviously a given, but I feel like intermediate and like kind of like the actual route running, the route tree, I feel like I can run it all, and I feel like I'm effective from it all, bubble screens, reverses, so anywhere a ball can touch my hands, I feel like I can make a play.
All right.
Works for me.
Yeah, I like it. Of course, listed anywhere 160, 165. He was asked about why toughness is important to him.
Oh, man, I'm a small guy, small player, so I kind of pride myself on just being a difference maker and making somebody that's going to make a play, whether that's being tough, making a big play, just on blocking, receiving the ball, just on special teams, anything. So I just pride myself with heart, and I feel like that's what motivates me and makes me different.
I like that.
Seems like the universal call on him that for a small guy, he's pretty tough.
If you're just getting into your car, we had Thomas Jones on from the Austin American Statesman. He said he's tough and said he is, you know, a complete wide receiver. So heard good reports there. Andy Reid also last night said Worthy's more than just speed.
Yeah, I like his makeup. I like the fact that he can go all day and that he loves football. You guys kind of know how we're wired here. Brett makes that a real characteristic that he likes. Likewise, as coaches, we love that. And so you find that out about a guy, and you can tell he's passionate about the sport. I think you'll see this when you meet him. And he loves to play, you know, and he's good at it.
But does seem kind of fit their character, but Kadarius Toney.
Yeah. Yeah, he loves football. We heard good reports. We're all optimistic. By the way, Albert Breer is reporting that the Vikings offered their first-round pick plus a 25 first-round pick, while the Giants offered their 25 first and the Patriots and another first in addition to get to number 3. The Pats said no, so they like what they got. We'll see if it ends up working out in the long run.
Welcome back. You're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, 5 o'clock hour, finishing strong as we get ready to hand it off to day 2 of the NFL Draft Rounds 2 and 3. Coming up first, though, the man who will put the finishing touch on what the hell exactly happened in this draft, Kevin Harlan, the voice of America, CBS TNT. When we want to know whether somebody got it right or wrong, we turn to the only man who really knows, Kevin Harlan. Kevin, how are you, sir?
You know, if I were making a spotting board for the NFL game that I was going to do, and I had a guy named Seren Petro who was right there in the notes column on my spotting board, I put incredible durability, nimble on his feet, incredibly bright, can make a move in the snap of a finger. I listened to you last night. I know I'm going to listen to you tonight as I'm going to the airport. I mean, like, you are a machine with this draft stuff. Holy cow. Congratulations to you and the station and all your hard work. I know you love the draft. You love the draft. And last night, you were on top of your game, and we listened late, and it was great. And I don't know how you do it, but, man, you do it. Here you are again today, just bright and cheery, and going right at it. You're amazing.
You are
amazing.
You are far too kind, and clearly, you know, having Curtis and Adam and Mark Bo Richter, it's a great team. It's our pregame team, and, you know, we've worked together for a long time, so it's a lot of fun we do. It is a labor of love. Trust me, it's labor till 12:15 right. In the morning, but it is a labor of love, and we do love it, and it's exciting. And, you know, our reaction, let's talk about what the Chiefs did, Kevin. Xavier Worthy, the fastest guy ever clocked at the Combine, so theoretically maybe the fastest guy in NFL history. Maybe we can get a match race between him and Tyreek Hill. But they love speed. He's not big, 5'11 and a half, 165 pounds, what he measured in at the Combine. But, man, look, our initial reaction was we didn't want him. You know, I think there's a tendency to be of the mindset that they just redrafted Mecole Hardman. But this guy was more productive at Texas. And I think the other part, and Mark Boerichter did a great job of really shedding light on this, is, listen, he's a much more polished receiver coming out of Texas than Hardman was at Georgia, but also just what it means to the scheme to have that kind of speed and the kind of speed that can catch. Because MVS brought that speed, but he really struggled catching the football, and it is a necessary component if you want to attack a defense from all angles, right?
No, you've nailed it, and Mark did too, actually. That, to me, would be the main theme is, with this offense, this head coach and this quarterback and the way they are set up, he fits so nicely into the scheme, and he is that X factor that really the Chiefs have missed since Tyreek left for Miami. Now, listen, clearly they have succeeded in his absence, but what made him so ferocious when they had Hill was his speed just caused defenses to always pay attention where this guy was. And, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling perhaps had a little bit of that quality. I think maybe with Kadarius Toney, they were hoping, and in Mecole Hardman, like, they were thinking of ways to do it, but you can't replace a multiple Pro Bowl, All-Pro, fastest guy, most talented ball guy in the league in Tyreek Hill and expect, you know, not to have perhaps a little bit of a downside, a little bit of a void that needs to be filled. And I'm not thinking this kid's going to do it. But he certainly, for what this team is looking to do, add and polish and adjust and tweak as opposed to rebuild, foundation digging. Like, they've done that, gone. Now they are in the process of maintenance, maintaining, improving. And that's the mindset they enter this thing with an eye, of course, to the future. And what's going to happen when so-and-so retires? And how are we going to fill this spot when this guy's contract comes up? Because we can't pay that, but we can with a rookie scale type of, you know, salary. So, like, all these things go into it for the Chiefs, who are at a very interesting time and not delicate, because there's nothing delicate about being a defending champion when you've got long-term guys that are there. You know, I just think that it feels good to me. And now, listen, if he was gone, they would have picked another guy that would have had, I think, just as much an impact. They're looking for that you know, the finishing touches, the frosting, so to speak. And this kid seems to – now, the weight, I know, is a concern. He's a little bit light. He gets in an NFL now, he's kind of come from an NFL-type program in Texas, but he comes to the NFL. They get their nutritionists and their weight guys and their athletic training staff on him. He may lose a tenth or he may lose a tad bit of speed. But what he does in building some bulk, perhaps, and being able to handle the rigors of an NFL season, I think he'll still be the fastest guy in the field, regardless. So this one perked my interest, and of course it was the end of the draft, but I love the pick by the Chiefs. Love it.
And they trade up from 32 to 28 to go get him. They basically drop down from the third to the fourth and drop down in the seventh. So they don't give up any picks. They're still going to get seven players. They're just going to pick lower. They're just not going to have anyone in the third now. So, you know, they just have a second, unless they trade back up into round three or round two today for what they've got to do today. So they do pay a bit of a price, and they felt like somebody else was coming to get him. We did see wide receiver go at 31 to San Francisco. We did see the Carolina Panthers move up one spot and grab a wide receiver. So, you know, it does feel like they wanted him. Wide receivers were in the water at that point after them. So it seems like they knew at least that, hey, I don't know if they're, you know, maybe they didn't know they were going after their guy, but they knew that there was wide receiver picks coming. And so I'll give Brett Veach. And now I think the kid just needs to be productive, right? Like, you know, if this is their move, and Brett Veach has never been shy about going up to get him, they didn't pay a lot. He pointed out, you know, kind of leading up to it with some of his comments, but in his post-game or post-draft press conference last night, he said, look, there were a lot of tackles there. We loved a lot of them, but like we thought, they were all gone before we had a shot. And that's kind of where Mark and I were. We kind of looked at each other and said, you know, I kept asking Curtis and Adam and Mark, I said, listen, if we're the lieutenants in the room and Red Beach is asking us, well, who do you love? Who are you going to beat on the table for right now? And we didn't have anybody that we love. We had guys that were like, well, here's who I'd take, but really I don't have anybody I love, so I'd like to trade down. So I would love to have seen a trade down, but they obviously love this guy. So they went and got him. I think, you know, now he just has to, you know, reward them for their confidence in him.
Yeah, you know, you get to the end of the draft like this, you're down to the final couple picks, you're trying to figure out where some of your wish list items are, and as you just depicted, they figured it out. They knew they had to move up a couple. I think they've got a good feel for what the rest of the teams that were drafting at that stage in the last third of the first round were going to do, the last group of teams. And they went after it, which has been kind of the trademark of this franchise. They see a player they like, they have no problem trying to maneuver and engineer some way to get to that pick and block the team that they think may get him. They probably thought he was going to go earlier, but I'm sure as he was lingering and those tackles were falling away and being picked ahead of him. And you and I had talked over the last month or so, just, you know, tackle would be just the great thing to get if you could go and find one, but they're gone, and they're a hard commodity to get, although I do think they're going to be able to get some other ones in the second round, third round, and get that. There's a tackle-heavy draft, and they should be able, I think, to still get a person that they feel very good about here in the next couple rounds if they chose to go that direction. But no, I like this pick, and can you imagine being in that? Because really when it comes down to it, you got your scouts and your personnel guy, and this staff is without question as good as there is in pro football. And that's what kind of group that Brett has put together. But can you imagine Andy Reid and Veach? Because really when it comes down to it, it's those two guys thinking about this pick and Andy, you know, chiming in and he's thinking as this name comes up and lingers on the board and thinking, his mind, I'm sure, was racing, like this kid races down the field and thinking how he's going to work. But, Mike, can you just see him? And if some of these other parts, the Clyde Edwards-Helaires and some of these people play at above what they've been doing, just what they can concoct with this offense going in, because you've got to continue to evolve. I mean, it's not going to be – they're going to have the same offensive scheme, but, man, you've got to introduce new facets and new things and new ways of thinking. And this kid gives them that dream, you know, it gives it now some texture. You've got a real part to this engine that maybe you didn't have before, that now you can begin to use some of these options that have been floating around, and he has an off season to work on it, trying to integrate this kid into the offense. I just love it on all areas. Now, these next, you know, six rounds are going to be interesting, because this is going to be the filler that continues to, you know, propel the Chiefs in the same direction they've been in here for the last 5-6 years, continues to put them at a level. So, yeah, it's great to have the first round pick, and I think they nailed it with this guy. But now these next six rounds will be the things that really sustain you and keep you going and keep the momentum continuing in the direction you want it to go. So I feel good about tonight, and I feel good about Saturday when they finish things off. But boy, they've begun, I think, with a real A mark with the kid they got for this particular team. With the rebuilding team, he makes no sense. With this team, I think it's a home run.
We're talking to Kevin Harlan here on the program. Kevin, 14 offensive players went before the first defensive player went. And then we did get a run, three straight defenders, 4 out of 5, 5 out of 7, I think, after that, six out of 8, actually, now that I look at it. We saw some defenders go, but, you know, to me, that speaks to the NFL getting it. I think the most important part of a team, and Patrick Mahomes is the ultimate cheat code, but if you don't have Patrick Mahomes, you better have all the weaponry, because – you know, the games now, there's so few possessions. I think this is one of the more underreported aspects of the game. There are so few possessions in football now that, you know, you have a situation where like the Chiefs had a game where they only had four possessions in the first half. They're so precious, and it's so important to get points. And that means one of your possessions oftentimes is with 1:21 left on the clock. You have to be able to score and score quickly. And you can't do that by grinding it out down the field or even nickel-diming it with 4 yard. You have to be able to take chunks. And to me, that's what the NFL did in this draft. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just one of those years where the cycle came around and it's a very heavy offensive year and we're going to see a bunch of defenders the next year. But I think teams realize, yes, defenses have caught up, but we have to be able to score, and we have to be able to score quickly because Patrick Mahomes giving them a three at the end of every half, or you give him the ball and down four, he's going to go down and score. Like, the short clock points are the cheat code in football, and I think that's what teams are realizing.
Well, you've got to have the quarterback, and clearly with all the quarterbacks taken so early in the draft and so many of them, I mean, teams are desperate for that position. And the money they paid Kirk Cousins down in Atlanta, they are desperate. They would crawl for however long they had to get that guy. And luckily in Kansas City and in a handful of other cities in the NFL and Green Bay and otherwise, they feel like, all right, we've got our guy, not for just like a 4 or 5 year. We got our guy for, you know, maybe another, you know, 8, 9, 10 years. Depending on age. So, I mean, when you take that off the table, when you say, we don't have a quarterback issue, we got our quarterback, we don't have an issue, it just frees you up as a staff to go out there and look at ways to really construct the team. But until you got the quarterback, you're so preoccupied, you're so, you know, entrenched in that position that it just overwhelms the whole draft room and the whole process about finding that guy. I mean, think of the – now, listen, everyone thinks, oh, Caleb Williams, check that box. And Daniels, check that box. And Nixon on down the line. And J.J. And all these other Gepenics. And like, but until you've got that guy, I think I just think it ties you up in that draft room in knots. When that guy is – you've already got him, or he's already established, or you've had a chance – now it just frees you up to really hit the draft market, to really figure out where your team needs help. And you're not preoccupied, well, can we find a guy maybe in the third round? Can we maybe dig up a quarterback in the second or the fourth round? Like, but those thoughts are gone. And so when you're the Chiefs, you can really build a team. And so when people say, God, I can't believe how many quarterbacks were taken early on, I say, because it just overwhelms a franchise to find that guy. And luckily we're here in this, you know, era of Chiefs football, and that is not a concern. That's the furthest thing from now. Listen, in 5, 6 years, I think that becomes a topic just because Pat's going to be then in his 30s, and you're going to have to think about, all right, you know, to me, the best model is to have the guy and then draft his heir apparent with about a 2 or 3 year window to mature. There are many examples of this in the NFL. There's Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. There's Steve McNair when he was with the Oilers, then Titans, and those veteran quarterbacks didn't like when he was drafted. He sat and watched for 3, 4, 5 years before they finally elevated him to a starter, McNair. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that maybe in Atlanta now with Penix and Kirk Cousins. So you get that gap, but the freedom that must exist in a draft room when you've got the quarterback already figured out and that now is put aside, it just opens up a flood of thought and creativity and figuring out, can we move up? Can we move down? Can we get more picks? Can we move up to get this guy? This is when I think a lot of the fun of the draft happens, the second round on. The first round has all the glitter because it's got the big names, and in this case, all these 6 quarterbacks. Now we really get an insight into what teams think in the second and third, and then, of course, Saturday, what they do there. You get a real insight into the way they're constructing a team and where they feel they need help. And when a guy is picked, it means not only just they just got a defensive lineman or they got an outside linebacker. No, it means, okay, this guy's contract is up in a year or two. This guy may be not performing at the level he was, and you can begin to see a vision. But until then, you're so preoccupied with that guy in the center or in the gun that you just can't – you almost can't think straight. And so I'm more anxious, quite frankly, to see what the Chiefs do. And of course they're different, but the second through seventh round, to me will be fascinating to see what they think, as opposed to us talking on shows like this or writing in papers or on internet sites, what they think they need to do to bolster various areas and where they think are areas of weakness, areas of need. And certainly with a kind of a, maybe a little sneak at the salary cap and what that is going to mean with contracts coming up and how they're going to maneuver around the money.
Bo Nix to the Broncos. Sean Payton obviously had a great marriage with Drew Brees, three conference championship games, one Super Bowl title in 15 or 16 years down there in New Orleans. Is this the hill he dies on? He either makes it or breaks it with Bo Nix with the Broncos, since he's, you know, put his hands on a young quarterback?
Well, I look at Bo Nix, and I don't know why. I think of Andy Dalton. I mean, I just think of a guy who's a solid college quarterback. This kid is mature. He comes into a system where, you know, I think Jarrett Stidham is still, am I right? Is he still with Denver? Is Stidham still with, I don't, maybe I'm wrong on that.
No, I think they traded for Zach Wilson.
Oh, they're a quarterback, yeah, but I don't know if they, I saw that, but
let me see where he is now.
Who is backing up Russell, Wilson, when he was there? I'm just into the NBA.
Give me one second, and I'll have that.
Who am I talking to? Who am I? Where am I? How am I? I don't know where I am. I know they got Zach. I don't know if they got him with the intention of, I think they see him as a project. His mechanics and his mind right now are just, they've been displaced since he was taken out of BYU, and all the different turbulence in New York and then the Rodgers entrance and like all the, like Flacco, they had all kinds of stuff going on. And I just don't know exactly. I can't believe they see him as a starter, but I think they feel like this is kind of like some found money, maybe, that we've got a guy who was taken so high in the draft. He's not completely impaired. We can figure this kid out, and I think that's exactly what the head coach thinks. And then I think with Nix, he says, I've got to draft somebody and try to form him in my vision. But I thought they had one more guy there. Who do they have?
So right now the third stringer is Ben DiNucci. Listed as the starter is Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
And, of course, losing absolutely nothing. The steel trap mind of Kevin Harlan. Last year's backup, and still there is the number two, is Jared Stidham.
Oh, is he right? Okay, well, that was a lucky. I stabbed in the car.
No, because Stidham left and went to a couple spots and came in. That's amazing. That's amazing that you remember the Jared. Those are those spotting boards burnt into your brain.
Yeah, that's terrible. I know, and I gotta wash that stuff in my head. But anyway, that's going to be an interesting quarterback room, and I think one now that Sean Payton feels like he can put his fingerprints on. I think he looks at Wilson and said, I think I can save this guy. I think he looks at Nix and says, why not take a chance on a kid who's going to come in as a mature college player, who's had a successful college run, who's got a lot of things that I like, and I think I can really, you know, make him into what I think he can be. And then you've got, you know, a couple of journeymen who have been around and can certainly kind of, you know, fill if I need to. So that will be one of the more interesting quarterback rooms in pro football. So I'm anxious to see what happens there. I know you've talked about this already, but to me, the most fascinating thing was the Penix and Cousins thing in Atlanta, right? As a guy who is so into the draft, And such an authority, but to you, was that like the here we go, firework number one has just been launched out of the vault, right? I mean, did you think that was it?
I actually, it's a firework. There's no doubt about that, and I actually like it because I think the quarterback position. Listen, I was the one guy when the Commanders, then the Redskins, but when the Commanders took RG3, and then took Kirk Cousins in the third. I said, listen, right. I get it. Like, you got to get quarterback right. And RG3 was oft injured at Baylor. Like, go ahead. If you have a commitment, if you like a guy, add him to the room, let him compete. If one of them's going to wilt, you don't want him anyway. And at least you find out about him right away. And so with Cousins, like, he's in his late 30s. He's coming off a torn Achilles. Like, I think the one thing, when Andy Reid got here, he immediately traded for Alex Smith. He went out and they signed that big-armed kid from Tennessee who wasn't drafted but had a big arm. I forget what his name was. And they also signed Chase Daniel. Like, they didn't just make one move. They threw as much, and then he constantly was on the prowl to get better at the quarterback position. Nick Foles came available. He brought Nick Foles in to help with the backup spot. And when they had their guy, you know, they were looking around for quarterbacks, and when they really had a commitment about a guy, they went and got him in Patrick Mahomes. So I think the Falcons did just what you said, Kevin. They've got their heir apparent, and they've got a veteran to teach him. And in a way, they told Kirk Cousins, like, hey, you got your guaranteed money. You got your contract. Now we'll build the team. You play football, we'll build the team. And I think there was always this kind of like, Minnesota seemed to be tiptoeing around him because, well, he might leave and he's only on a couple-year deal. And, you know, Atlanta's like, hey, you're signed, we're paying you, and you'll play football, and we'll build the roster. I kind of like it. Do you?
Well, I do like it. I like it from sitting here in Kansas City, but if I'm sitting in Kirk Cousins' seat, I'm thinking, whoa. I'm looking at this like it's a five-year thing, and you're not going to make this number one highly picked quarterback, you know, sit here for 5 years. So what does that mean for me? And I guess this is just the way I would operate. I mean, this is just one man's opinion, but I guess I would say, you know, here is our vision. Here is what the draft is going to present us because of our drafting position. We would always be interested in this. And I would lay it out before he signs. I think transparency helps. All these athletes, they'll tell you, and you talk to retired guys, and if you ask in any sport, NBA, NFL, you say, you know, like, what was, when you look at a coach, when you look at a relationship with an organization, to you, what was one of the most important things about that? And I've had a lot of conversations like this, and they say, I just want to know where I stand. I don't want to play games. I want to know what I can do to get better. I want to know what I'm up against. I want to know the lay of the land. I just be transparent and always let me know. I don't even need to know but maybe they did. And maybe they said, now we don't think Penix is going to be there. We don't think Nix is going to be there. Whoever they thought may fall to that position. But if they're there, you need to know that we're building a long-term thing here. Right now, you are the flavor of the day, and you're going to be that way. Because you bring us something we've not had. You get legitimate quarterback play from a guy who has proven himself in the league. The statistics measure that. By the way, the statistics of Cousins are basically the same as Dak Prescott. And everybody just goes, woohoo, over Prescott. They're basically the same quarterback statistically. If you look at the numbers, they're almost identical. So getting Cousins is a huge boost for Atlanta, and many people think they're ready to take off now that they got that position filled. But these guys aren't forever, and they know that. And like you said, he got his money. He made a ton with the Vikings, and now he has a chance to be a starting quarterback with a legitimate team in Atlanta. But an organization is not being good to themselves and true to themselves and honest if they say, we've always got to look 3 and 5 and 7 years ahead to what we've got going on. That's why I say, don't be surprised in the next 3 to 5 years when quarterback becomes the topic in Kansas City about, okay, Mahomes is at this run and probably another Super Bowl championship or two. He's putting in his bag and more numbers and record-setting performances. But someday you're going to have to replace him. You're just going to have to do that. And some quarterbacks don't like it. Brady didn't like it in New England when he was in the throes of his career up there when they would get somebody that they didn't like. He didn't like when Garoppolo was drafted, did not like it at all. And it was friction between those two, and that's well documented. So it's a touchy thing. But if you're transparent, if you tell them, I think players really, really appreciate that aspect. And it just builds trust. And at the end of the day, that's what you want. You want players trusting players, but you want players trusting coaches and players trusting organizations. And so I got to believe they had to mention it sometime. If he were available, this is what we may do. And I like to think on draft day, the Cousins may have been said, hey, just let you know, we're 3 picks away, but this kid is still there. There's a very good chance we're going to go after him. And on the other side, I would say this too by Kirk Cousins, and kind of jumping off to your point. And that is, you know, you got your money, you got your guarantee, you're the unquestioned guy, but, you know, don't be selfish. It's a team game, and it's an organizational game. And the organization has always got to look out what's best for them. And if they can do that to the player as well as we have to you, just jump on board and just say, I can't wait to be with this kid. He's going to be a terrific. Just take the high road. And I think he basically did. But to say he was surprised, I don't think you say that publicly. I think you sleep on it for a night. You make yourself unavailable and answer it the next morning when you've had a chance to kind of let things settle in and run them through your mind and figure out the scenarios and talk with your team too. Talk with your front office and just say, walk me through this so I give the right answer. But I got to tell you, I'm a little bit shocked that you did this. You know, behind closed doors, great. Publicly, you got to say something different.
Yeah, and full disclosure, like they did talk about that they wanted to draft a quarterback. Cousins was shocked that it was in the first round. Like, I don't think they said, right. Hey, we're gonna do this right up here with the first pick. And he'll be 36 before the season starts, as we mentioned, coming off an Achilles injury. And here's the interesting.
Exactly. Come on. Yeah. Come on, right? Yeah. This makes total sense. I get it.
Here's the interesting thing about his contract. $50 million signing bonus, which to me right there, I gave you $50 million. Like, to your point, be a team player now. Right? Like, I shouldn't have to ask you to do this. The $50 million is for you to be a team player. So, you know, that's the first thing that jumps at me. But then it is interesting about his contract. $50 million signing bonus, $12.5 million in base. Okay, after this year, he's made $62.5 million. Then $27.5 million next year. Okay, after 2 years, he's made $90 million. But if they walk after that, he's a $57.5 million cap hit to keep, $25 million to cut. So they save $22 million if they walk. Now, if they go 3 years, he's only $12.5 million to cut. But, like, I think he's looking at it going, for the first time, he hasn't had one of those contracts. You know, the Vikings kept giving him the fully guaranteed deals. And coming off an Achilles tendon injury, he wasn't able to get that fully guaranteed deal. And so what is, you know, widely reported and accurately reported as a 4-for-180 could very well be a 2-for-90, and they walk. So I get why it's a, you know, a little bit of a comeuppance for Kirk Cousins.
Let me say something. Thank God you're good with numbers. I have a hard time counting to 10. You just went through things that I don't – like advanced calculus there. So thank goodness you understand all that stuff. But that Syracuse education is coming right through. But I would say this, that I agree with all your points, and he should too. At 36 off an Achilles, come on. Right? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Like, you've got 3 productive years, perhaps. You're going to a new team, new offense. You know, there's always that settling in period. I have no doubt that he's going to be successful. I don't know if he's going to be otherworldly, but I think he's going to be a real hit. But the organization does a disservice to itself. If they got a kid that they believe so highly in Penix, that's a disservice to your fan base, but to your organization and to the heart of what these guys should be doing. You always look ahead in all of our businesses, broadcasting or football or whatever. You're always looking 3. And if you're the head of that company and you're not doing that, then you shouldn't be the head of the company. That's just what these people do. That's what their job is. And they've done other places, and that kid can sit. I don't think Penix is ready to play. He's got an incredible arm. He's got 2 knees that are questionable, but NFL guys have signed off on him. So they're saying that's not the issue. He was bad under pressure. We do know that, where he was at Indiana and then last season. But all that being said, he has been a productive quarterback with an incredible arm, and he is doing himself. He's walking into a perfect situation. Let's say Cousins stays here for 3 years. I learned the game for 3 years. I learned from a good guy, a guy who works harder maybe than any other quarterback in pro football, mentally and physically, to get it right. So, you know, it's not unlike Rodgers being under Favre up in Green Bay. It's not unlike Young being under Montana at San Francisco. I just think those are master classes. Those are PhD classes, level classes for backup quarterbacks. My guess is it's going to be terrific. It's going to work out for the Falcons. It'll work out for Penix, and it already is working out for Cousins.
We're talking to Kevin Harlan here in the program. Time for our Final Four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, official healthcare provider of Kansas Athletics. Together with LMH Health, if you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Learn more right now at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Kevin, I'll start you with this. We began with Xavier Worthy's 4:21:40. What would Kevin Harlan's 40 be today? Rich Eisen, by the way, ran a 6.22.
Yeah, I'd take 6.22. I think Rich is a teammate with me at Westwood One, and I know he does this for St. Jude, and it's an incredible legacy he's built up in that charity fundraising endeavor that he's gone through. I'll take 6.2 right now. I'd like to think I could do 6.2. I might be able to. I need a couple of weeks, though, to kind of get going, but I'll take 6.2 right now.
6.2. Six still has the wheels. Kevin Harlan, 6.2. I like it. All right, since you brought it up, who will go further this point forward in the postseason in any one year? Who will have the best postseason run here moving forward, Kirk Cousins or Dak Prescott?
I'll go with Prescott. I just think the Cowboys, they've kind of drawn the line in the sand, haven't they, for this upcoming season?
Oh, yeah.
This is the year. This is it. And I think that sense of urgency will play. I don't know that the pressure will get to them. I think they've got everything put together. I think that at the end of the day, it'll be Prescott. And he's younger. We know he's younger, so he's got more time to do it. And I think he's a terrific quarterback. But people need to understand, they always don't think of Cousins in terms of being one of the elite quarterbacks. Everyone thinks of Prescott as elite. I don't know if it's because the star is on the helmet or he's in Dallas playing for the Cowboys, if that's it, or if he really does. But they're the same statistical quarterback, basically. He's younger. I think Prescott will be more than Cousins.
What's your favorite chip? Do you have a favorite chip? A go-to?
Doritos, basically. Right, that you're talking. Hopefully, you're talking about that. Are you talking about that kind of chip?
Yes, okay. Not computer chip, munchie chip.
Yeah, chip, computer chip, championship. Chip from my three sons. No, I'll pick Doritos.
Okay, Doritos, solid choice there. And finally, the NBA champ will be who? See if you've got a change of heart.
No, nah, I'm sticking with Boston. I don't know. Yeah. Listen, Miami's going to hit 23 threes like they did the other night. I still think Boston is the best team. They're a different team. I love Holiday in the backcourt running things. They'll answer it. They'll be fine. I'm sticking with Boston.
Boston Celtics, there it is.
It's a Boston-Denver final. Denver is the deepest team, the strongest team, with the MVP and Jokic. To me, Jokic is the MVP. I still think that Boston is the team, but let's see how they get through. Miami causes Boston problems. They just always have, and they're gonna. This is going to be a weird first round. I think after this round, the Boston will move. I just think it's their year. But I saw Denver the other night against the Lakers. Denver's terrific, and defending a championship is hard, and they're doing it right now. But they won last night, so they're up now, 3-0 on the Lakers, I guess. So I think close that series tomorrow night in Los Angeles, and I think they're going to play a wonderful game and beat the Lakers, and hopefully, and for that, for them, I love the Lakers. I love LeBron and I love AD, but from them defending, I think Denver can do it if they can get out of this and get some more rest. I think rest for them, mentally and physically, will be a very good thing until they get to the second round.
Kevin, you're the man. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend. We'll talk next week.
You got it. Thank you so much, and congratulations on the great draft coverage and all your Chiefs information. It's really it's an honor to be on with you. You know so much, and you give great insight. And you have numbers at your fingertips and observations that only you can provide. So it's been a lot of fun listening to this this last month leading to the draft, and certainly last night. Keep it going tonight. We'll be listening again.
You're far too kind. Kevin Harlan, the best in the business. From CBS TNT, Westwood One. We'll come back, wrap things up with the kicker.
But first, a good sense, end of the hour answer. Before this year, how many times have there been no defensive players taken in the top 10 picks?
Once.
Never.
Wow.
Before this year, the lowest that the first defensive player went was number 8 overall in 2021.
God, it's amazing. I think it's going to be more and more a trend.
Yep.
Offense being valued higher, but I don't think we'll see it to this degree.
But twice in 4 years says trend.
Yeah, it does say trend. Listen, GoodSense, we just gave it away, GoodSenseSubs.com. You can get it right now. Order it for on your way home. You pick whatever time you want to pick it up. Go to GoodSenseSubs.com. Use that app as well. You can get it. And don't forget, for those graduation parties or any party, you can get the freshly sliced sub trays, fresh baked cookie trays, family-sized pastas, and gourmet meatball slider kits at Good Sense right now. They are perfect for catering, and you can get $5 off any large catering tray or family-sized pasta with code WHBG5. That's right. Save right now. WHBG5, and you get $5 off. It's at GoodSense.com or on the Good Sense app. Listen, let me clear up something we said a little bit earlier about what was available. The Patriots turned down 3 picks from the Vikings, both of their first-round picks this year and their 2025 first, which you have no idea what it's going to be. And do you really think the Vikings, who clearly want to go up and get probably Drake May, I don't think it was probably J.J. McCarthy, you really think with a rookie quarterback the Vikings are a lock to have a great season?
No.
No. So you could have gotten 11, you could have gotten 23, and you could have gotten next year maybe a mid-first-round pick. In addition to your own first next year, you've got the ammunition to do what you want, and the Patriots didn't take it.
First-year coach has all the leeway to do that, too.
They have Drake May now. Drake May better be good. And with not much around him, he's going to get beat to hell and have no one to throw to. Good luck. I think he can plan on the Patriots being bad for quite some time.